This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Welcome to Heart and Soul with me, Lauren Booth, your place to reflect. When I accepted Islam 6 years ago, my daughters, then aged 8 and 10 years old, had 3 questions for me. The first question they asked was, "Mum, if you accept Islam, will you still be our mummy?" I think they thought that Islam was a country they were going to go to and I'd vanish into it. The second was this, "Mum, if you're Muslim, will you still drink alcohol?" Well, I guess that gives an indication of how important alcohol was in our household at the time. And then the third question really surprised me. "Mum, if you come to Islam, will you still show your chest in public?" I looked at my daughter and I said, "Firstly, how dare you ask your mother such a rude question? And secondly, what do you mean?" She said, "Look, you wear these low-cut tops and it's really embarrassing and our teachers can see everything and we don't like it." I said to my daughters, "Look, if I become Muslim, I will stop drinking alcohol. I'll still be your mum and I will be dressed from head to foot. Every time I go out, they said, 'We love Islam.'" Now, this was from children. But I wonder, what does modesty, this seemingly outdated concept, have to offer a modern life? Joining me today to explore the Islamic concept of modesty and its practical applications is Kathleen Toomey from Australia. Kathleen is a PT and aquatic instructor by profession, but she holds a BA in Islamic studies from Omdurman University of Sudan. Kathleen is currently working alongside Marcus Bin Zayed Islamic Centre on its Islamic and Cultural Public Programs. Welcome.
Welcome. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Lauren. Great to be here.
Lovely to see you. Now, first of all, you're from Australia, and I'm looking at you now, and I can see that you are wearing niqab, which in the West is symbolic now with oppression. Are you feeling oppressed today?
Not at all. In fact, the opposite. I feel it as a liberation. Sounds a bit strange, yeah, being on that, coming from that side of the fence or that side of the world, and especially from my own background as an Australian, and just contemplating how you introduce my profession, you know, as a personal trainer and an aquatics instructor, and really from my past, you know, I was the beach girl, you know, I was right out there. So to be, it's such a contrast now, you know, to be, as you said, sitting in this situation, which is something that I must say that I never really imagined.
Can you talk us through that change from a kind of Baywatch Bondi Beach girl to wanting to cover everything up in public? Was it just a physical manifestation? What happened in your mind and your heart to come to where this is a comfortable place, especially in a hot country? I just remember sitting on a bus once in Florida, and there was an American lady, and I was taking my kids to one of the Disney places, and she turned to me and she was staring, and I thought, okay, this is a great opportunity for her to ask me a question. I said, "Please, any question at all that you have about Islam, I won't be offended. I've heard it all. I'll be happy to answer it." And she stared at me and she said, "Y'all are hot in there or what?" And, you know, and it was a compassionate moment because she just wanted to know that poor woman is sweating more than I am. So how did it come into your heart and your mind to do this?
Well, I mean, looking back at, yeah, the past and the beach days and things, and its relation with hijab and how I am today, you know, I have to say all thanks to God in that sense. You know, it was a big thing for me and still is today, you know, to exercise, take care of myself. And I have to say, one of the first questions for me exploring Islam initially was, do I have to give this up, you know? Because exercise is my life, looking after myself and my health, and I believe that was the right way to live, and I wanted it, you know. And And when I found out, no, on the contrary, yes, you know, Muslims should be taking care of their health. I was like, great, you know, that's an extra plus.
Can we backtrack a little bit? Mm-hmm. Tell us, how old were you when you began looking into Islam as a faith choice, perhaps for you? And what background did you come from?
Well, to be honest, I wasn't looking for any faith other than what I already had. And I was actually quite a staunch Catholic, to be honest. You know, I was one that just never looked left or right in terms of other faiths, you know. And as I said, you know, my own day-to-day lifestyles, socializing, you know, as you'd mentioned earlier on, the typical sort of Aussie thing, beach, going out, the clubs and things like that. So, you know, for me, although I had that and that was part of the society, you know, in Australia it's quite an outdoor society, very active, and I was into all that. And, you know, to sort of think, how does that work along with my staunch religious beliefs? You know, really, there was sort of one world and then there was another world.
So there was a disconnect between what you were spiritually told should be happening and what you physically saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt, for sure. And for me, I have to say, it was one of those gradual clearing of the fog, as they say. You know, it wasn't any lightning bolts in terms of my change of faith. But continual, I have to say, actually, when I finally did get interested in reading about Islam, and it was really through social interaction, you know, being a social person. You know, I travelled at the time. I was living in Malaysia and doing my swimming thing, you know. That was basically sort of what I took, and you know, as a job when I worked around various places as I travelled, and you know, along with that, but it was observing these people, you know, how they were, the way they treated me. You know, I come from a big family. You know, there's seven of us. You know, mum and dad, nine, and like I said, a strong practicing Catholic. So I took my religion wherever I went, although there was that other side of life, and then. For me, I guess it connected, you know, in seeing the Malaysians who were Muslims and the lifestyle that they live, their generosity, their hospitality, you know, me being a woman alone, living and working in their country, you know, trying to embrace the culture and the lifestyle to a degree, of course, you know, but being a social person, one who's interested in learning and things, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed embracing the culture. I learned the language. You know, I lived with Malay people. And really, that helped me to feel more a part of the society, a part of being with the people and learning their, what seemed to me at that time to be a cultural way of living, you know. Mm. But as I then, you know, further went on to learn about Islam, then, okay, the connection comes together, you know. Of being able to still have my social life to a degree, or maybe I should say, still have my social life, but a slight adjustment on that social life, and still have that connection that I really wanted and needed with the Creator. You know,
did anybody at that time say to you, "You have to be Muslim," or "It's haram what you're wearing," or make you feel a lesser person because you weren't following that path?
Yeah, of course there are always like the Malays around, you know, in one ear, "Come on, be a Muslim, you know, you're a good person, this and that." And then there was the other side of my other friend saying, don't you dare, you know, like they're going to make you Muslim, you better stay away.
They're going to make you Muslim, like, yeah. You know, it's an entry to a club, or, you know, you're going to be hijacked and put into a faith place.
Yeah, and that's ironic the way, you know, there were locals, you know.
The locals were saying that.
Indians and others, you know, right. Because it's an Indian and Chinese right. culture as well. And, you know, to sort of say, yeah, you know, for them to, some of them to note that difference, that, oh, it's as if it's forced on me.
Let's just make it clear here. Differences are good. God has created us all in different tribes and cultures to share each other's tastes and flavors and dynamics and languages and how dull it would be if none of that existed,
sure.
If there was only one type of tree or flowers were only red. This is a dynamic and beautiful place to live, and we celebrate diversity.
Yeah, I was thinking that only just the other day about being in Qatar, you know, and And it's kind of the hodgepodge, as they say, right, of all different nationalities, faiths, of course, faiths and things. But of course, ultimately, you know, here being in a Muslim country, but there are others who come and live here and live here happily, you know, and embrace the way of life here, or get to a level of understanding and feel comfortable, you know, maybe which might have seemed alienated initially. And I kind of felt that way first, you know, going to Malaysia in that regard. But, you know, I looked around me, I noticed, you know, this is how the people dress, this is how the people act. And I just kind of blended in with it all, you know. So,
But you know what? The niqab is very, very rare. Just to describe that, in case you're not aware of the term, it includes the face veil and a modest black loose clothing, so that the physique and the face are covered, apart from the eyes and the hands. And nobody. It's quite not. I won't say nobody, but it's very rare in Malaysia to see this. So when did that become part of your path?
Wearing of niqab, you mean? Mm. Yeah. Well, in Malaysia, not so. It was really more when I came here to the Gulf, in looking at the contrast in the society. Definitely, after I became Muslim, took me some time, you know, in terms of modesty. When you talk about that, it was like, as I said, it was a gradual progression for me. Like, I sort of went from, you know, shorts to pants to skirts to, you know, long shirts and, you know, scarves, coloured to plain, and then eventually, you know, abaya. And then, of course, coming over to this part of the world, then deciding to wear niqab, the face veil. You know?
Can we talk a little bit about how it feels to be a woman and go out in the clothing? Because you can't communicate with your face. And look, beauty is really important. It always has been, and it always will be. It carries a lot more weight in the current, how should we say, paradigm. Women's beauty, you get paid more the more beautiful you are. These are business facts. And yet you're choosing to cover that completely and take that out of the equation. How does it feel to go out and interact with people when they can't know you?
In this society, you mean, in general? Or
I want to know about in this society and also about when you go home.
Well, as I said earlier, you know, at the beginning, being in this situation of covering, I feel much more liberation, much more freedom than what I had previously, to be able to move about, get from A to B when I need to move in public, and not to be bothered in a way that I can just get on with things, get the job done, if they want to say, and feel that respect, you know, that I get, especially from the males of the community. But I can also say, even without niqab, even when I was in Australia and wearing abaya, wearing a hijab, wearing a scarf, is that, funny to say, what I observed was the same kind of respect from a community predominantly, even when I'm not in a Muslim area. And to me, what triggered to me was like, you know what, that's just their nature. You know, something, I guess, similar when they see the nun, you know, walking down the street, same type of thing. It's just like a normal reaction of a reverence or a type of respect to say, hey, you know, leave this woman type of thing to what she's doing. And you know, I'd even get like guys moving to the side of the road, like on the path. If you're on the path, they'd step to the side.
Was that prejudice and fear, or you actually felt it was a sort of respect?
Yeah, I felt it as a respect, for sure. I didn't feel that at all. Now, I'm not going to say that maybe some people may not have experienced that, but from my experience, definitely it was something that I could see. It was an automatic reaction that, you know, hey, let me be the gentleman here. I guess if you want to put it in our terms like that, it was more reminding them, or their natural reaction of being the gentleman, you know, moving aside for the woman, letting her move her way and get on with her business and things like that.
And I have to say, when I go back to the UK, I do miss that. You know, when you get pushed and pulled about and you think, wow, to be offered a seat would be really nice. I've never been one of those women, by the way, who said, don't offer me a seat, I'm as good as any man. I'm like, there are times you need to sit down. Yeah. You know, I've been pregnant twice. you know, those are months of sickness followed by a lot of hard work. I like a chivalrous society. Yeah. So what we're going to do now is we are going to hear some spoken word on Talk Islam. It's called My Hijab, and we'll be back with Kathleen Toomey after this. You're listening to Heart and Soul on QF Radio with me, Lauren Booth. Sharing some gems of knowledge with us today is Kathleen Toomey. Welcome back, Kathleen.
Thank you. Thanks, Lauren.
We were talking before that break about the beauty of chivalrous behaviour and of being left alone when you go out. I mean, I did feel a loss when I went from young and beautiful to slightly less young and slightly less beautiful, but there was also, I have to be honest, a sense of relief at not being whistled at.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think we can unanimously agree with that. I mean, you know, looking and thinking about actually, you know, the nature of women and how they do want to be admired. They do want to be told how beautiful they are and things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a level of it, right? They're not necessarily looking for the other things that come along with it, right? And so definitely, sure, when the whistles and advances come with that, it's like, yes, you know, we say, great, alhamdulillah, thanks God, you know, for hijab, for the covering that we, as I say, you know, we can move around and not have to worry about those things, but yet we feel that respect, like I was mentioning earlier, and really over time of, you know, wearing hijab and learning about Islam, it has really helped me to understand that aspect of respect from the nature between men and women. I mean, I was thinking earlier about myself, you know, as I say, going out, being social, being the beach girl, but I also, because I grew up with four brothers, you know, so I was very much the tomboy type thing, and I was, you know, I'm pretty much the smallest in my family, so I was always felt like I had to prove myself. I had to challenge other people. So if men wanted to do things for me, as we were talking about chivalry and the gentleman approach and things, I would be like, no, no, it's okay, I can do it, you know. But, you know, now, you know, the beauty of Islam and the respect that Islam gives, that God gives to women, in such a way that I say, you know, today, you want to carry my bags? Carry them, be my guest, you know, and it is so much nicer. I mean, just the reaction of men anyway, when we look at the nature of men, they want to do that. They want to feel good. They want to feel admired. So let them do their job. You know?
I think it's one of the many positives about being in the Gulf, and specifically being here in Qatar, is that you get looked after as a woman.
Sure.
Somebody packs your bags and then they carry them for you. Mm-hmm. And if anybody can help you out, they'll help you. I remember trying to go for a walk one day, mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun style. And it was summer, and my daughter and I were trying to have this walk, and the cars would stop, and I realised the men were actually traumatised and thought, mm-hmm. what terrible thing has fallen these two women that they have to walk, and
exactly.
they were trying to help.
Exactly.
And I think that's a beautiful concept for women to be cared for by society. We don't
sure.
have to, listen, neither Kathleen or myself would consider ourselves shrinking violets. We're not going to faint outside the door unless we are sick. Allah protect us from that. We're going to get on with our lives. But but how nice to have the rights of one another respected.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I remember when I first came to Qatar, it was like, why are these women being dropped at the front door of the shopping mall? Can't they walk? You know, being a person of exercise, right? And it's like, come on, go park, and you're blocking the traffic anyway, you know? But as you rightly said, you know, here it's really emanates the position of the woman, the Muslim woman here, the woman in general, but especially the Muslim woman in the society, as you said, walking along the street. Like, I gave that up straight away. Like, I knew that, hey, this just wasn't befitting for women here in this part of the world. And it's not because they're looked down upon at all. It's not because they are looked at something inferior. The opposite. Well, on the contrary, it's so opposite, as you said. You know, it's something to raise them that they're important to the family, but they are to be protected, or and their interests are to be looked after by the men in the home. And I think that's wonderful, you know, coming from a society that just says, hey, good luck, go for it, type thing.
Final thought, some pieces of advice for young women out there who either feel nervous seeing women in niqab, or perhaps are considering changing their own exterior. What advice would you give?
Well, I would say, you know, thanks for bringing that up, because I have come across people, and I won't even say they're not necessarily people who aren't Muslim, even Muslims, when you're talking about the face veil. You know, I'd say ask, you know, come and ask us, let us let out, or let us know how you feel, or your questions as to why this you feel uncomfortable about it and things like that. And we'll gladly explain it to you, and we welcome that type of approach. And please don't ever feel inferior or feel, oh, I'm going to be upsetting you. No, we'll gladly explain how it is. And as I said, you know, from the beginning, like the freedom that we feel for this, and the respect and honor that we get as women in the society, it's really something you have to kind of feel. I mean, I would even say, hey, go out and try it for yourself. You know, really go out, wear an abaya. Or, you know, if you want to go and try the face, okay, go ahead. But even just wearing the abaya and the scarf and is such a contrast. You know, I've had many people mention that, and really I would encourage it. Go out, try it, see for yourself. You know, we can only say so much, but, you know, Proof is in the pudding, right?
Perhaps this is something the cultural centre can do. Try a hijab day. I know universities in the UK have done this. Sister Kathleen Toomey, thank you so much for that insight into modesty and what it feels like to be dressed in this way. Jazakallah khair. May Allah the Provider pour His abundance upon us all and guide us all to the best way of living together as humanity. That's all from Heart and Soul today. More tomorrow. Assalamu alaikum. The producer for this series is Ihab Al-Sheikh.